You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome back to the Horse Health Cast. I'm Ashley Lecomte-Lozich, head of R&D for Smart Equine.
And I'm Jenna Bosgarden, manager of digital marketing for Smart Equine. Coming up on today's show, we are tackling another big subject in horse health. So grab a snack, settle in, and get ready.
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Health Cast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinary or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinary or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you've put another big one on our schedule today, haven't you, Jenna? So we're going to talk a ton about gastric health today, guys, from signs, symptoms, and management to supplements, drugs, and other support. So let's get into it.
Okay, so I feel like for most of us, we've had or ridden or known the horse that when you girth them up, they flatten their ears or crank their tail or lift a leg threateningly. And sometimes maybe it's a behavioral thing and sometimes maybe it's not. And I feel like that's such a common way that people kind of get introduced to gastric health issues. But like when we say gastric, like let's take it all the way down to bare bones. Ashley, what are we talking about when we're talking gastric health?
Sure. So I know that we've already had a full podcast episode on like the whole GI tract, right? So We know that it's a very lengthy tract, that it has some cool, unique features that humans do not have. But today we're going to be focusing just on the stomach. So stomach is a small but high impact organ. Remember, we talked about the capacity of the stomach is relatively small and compared to the size of the horse. So it does have some really unique features, including that it's constantly producing stomach acid, constantly secreting bile. So horses were not like us, right? They were not designed to have small and frequent meals and then run in between and use that energy stored for later. They are designed to graze like all day. Like when you look at a horse out in their natural habitat, if you were to put them out into a field, they would choose to be grazing all the time. It's how their bodies were designed. So of course, their stomachs have then had to adapt to do that. So instead of having a gallbladder that secretes bile or secreting stomach acid as needed, it is constantly having these juices flow into the belly, which then, of course, can cause some issues. So because we have changed how they are naturally kept, some horses live in stalls, some horses go out and turn out by themselves and they don't have buddies. Some horses have large grain meals to meet high caloric demands. Some horses have a lack of forage, or they're getting, two hay meals during the day with long periods of time throughout the day where they don't have hay in front of them. Introducing travel stress, even just training, even having high training demands on them. These are all things that can change that gastric environment and ultimately can lead to some gastric distress.
Yeah. And so we're talking about gastric being stomach. And like you said, it's not a very big organ, but it's a very, very influential one for them. And you kind of gave us a really helpful, snapshot list of some of the physical differentiator triggers of, not being able to graze all day and having hay and, sometimes, but not all the time. And I think some of the other ones that we kind of can overlook easily because we're so used to managing horses the way they currently are, that it's easy to kind of forget that it's not necessarily ideal to their body structure, but things like even having a high grain diet, like some horses do need it. Some horses thrive on it, but that's not necessarily how they were designed to digest food. Being in work, we love riding our horses, but again, it's different than how they were necessarily designed. I mean, they look like they were designed to carry a human. Look at that beautiful, strong back.
Right.
At the end of the day, that's not necessarily their intended purpose. It's what we've made their purpose. Like you said, with travel and showing and increased stall time that goes along with that, all of that kind of goes back to stress. And we've said this before that the word stress kind of has a negative connotation, but when it comes to this, stress is just an added pressure of their existence. So they're not looking at their email inbox building up as they exist and being stressed. But the idea of,
Yes, physiological stress. Yeah,
exactly. It's an added.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of those, and that's probably not even all of them, but a lot of those kind of are at the top of the list for common risk factors for gastric issues. But before I even want to go further than that, So we've touched on what the stomach is and like some common risk factors. But when we're talking gastric upset, like this isn't a stomach ache. Like this isn't colic. That's a whole separate episode for us later on. So like what is gastric upset in a horse when we're talking about it in this way?
I mean, I think that that's a loaded question. I think that what we're typically, what you and I or the typical horse person would be classifying gastric upset would likely be like an ulcery belly. I think that's the first thing we go to. When we think of like a human gastric upset, we think of like tummy troubles.
Yeah, like I shouldn't have like, dairy and I had 3 ice cream cups.
Right, right. And I think that is more in line to how we would think about like a horse colicking. Mm-hmm. So gastric here, we're really talking about the stomach only. And again, remember, this is a one-way shoot. So, you know, things work a little bit different in horses. But yes, I think that we're typically, whenever we talk about a horse having gastric issues, we're usually talking about some type of ulceration of the gastric tissues.
And do we have like a definition or like a just a layman's term version of what an ulcer is for somebody who's not seen or heard of that before?
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, if you haven't seen or heard of this, it's so interesting. You should Google equine gastric ulcer syndrome.
With the caveat, don't be squeamish.
Right, right, right. That too. Don't be squeamish. So it is effectively these small lesions, not actually necessarily always small, but lesions in the stomach lining of horses due to the acid in their belly sloshing around. Sometimes it's, you know, just predisposed, you know, horses can be predisposed to it, but they're graded. And sometimes it looks like a little bit of, I just went through this with my mare Tilly, so I can tell you what I saw on the screen. But, you know, sometimes, and again, I'm not a vet. So this is like, I'm explaining this to you. Today, you're not getting really scientist Ashley. You're getting like a little bit of physiologist Ashley, and then like mostly ulcery horse mom Ashley. So
love it. Well, hate Tilly it for just you, love it for us.
Yes, hate it for us. But Tilly just went through this, so I have had like some firsthand experience with this. And so like grade one ulcers are kind of looking like a thickening of the lining. Grade two, you're starting to see like little pink lesions. And then as they get more and more intense, you can start to see the lesions darkening. They may be getting a little bit bigger. And, you know, with that, you would expect to see more pain. Now, that's not necessarily the case because you can have horses with grade one that are like really acting out and horses with grade four that are just as stoic as can be. So, but yeah, it's a lesion. It's an abrasion or a lesion in the stomach lining.
Perfect. Thank you. I feel like I like
yes
ahead on that. But before
no, that's okay.
I want to make sure that we had some like good core definitions.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to come back to more about like what ulcers are and you know how you find them and what you do about them. But like I want to go the actual progression. So
sure,
we went over like a brief checklist of you know some things that can cause gastric stress and things. But in the very beginning, I touched on like a very brief sign a horse can be struggling like with the girthiness. But I'd love to kind of also go through either from, you know, scientist or
horse, yeah,
Ashley, like yeah, what other signs that horses could be struggling with gastric health and gastric comfort.
Sure. So I want to make one more thing because I think we went through like the risk factors. These things do not mean your horse is going to get ulcers, right?
Sure. Yes.
So I just want to make that like abundantly clear. There are some horses that tolerate these things so much better than others. There are also There's, I won't say that it's hugely prevalent, but wild horses get ulcers, right? So like horses where everything is correct, they still get ulcers and it happens. But we do know that these additional risk factors obviously are going to take it up a notch for horses that are, you know, being managed in those ways.
Yeah.
But yeah,
an awareness thing for us as horse owners and horse people, yes, not a surefire, oh gosh, I've checked off 3 of the 5, it's happening kind of thing. This is just
exactly
people can know.
So if you check off 3 of the 5, just be cognizant that your horse is at higher risk for ulcers, mm-hmm, and be sure that you're doing what you can do to help prevent that. That's all.
Yeah. Great call out on that.
So some things that you can look at. The first thing that I look at, yes, girthiness. But again, a lot of these are like kind of non-specific and nondescript. Like horses can be girthy because they have poor saddle fit. Horses can be girthy for a lot of reasons. And all of these signs that I'm going to talk through right now are pretty non-specific. Like these could be attributed to a lot of things. The first thing that I noticed in Tilly when we decided that we should have her scoped was a change in her attitude and a refusal to work. She was not interested in moving forward. She went from being really ho-hum and excited to do work to like, this doesn't really feel great. So we didn't really see girthiness in her. We didn't really see some other things that you may look for that are easy to observe are a dull coat, weight loss, change in condition. They just start to get pointy in places that you'd like to see them round. You know, you just start to see them kind of wasting in some areas. Poor appetite. You see that horses will go off their feed. Sometimes they'll start dunking their hay in their water. So it's a change in...
Oh, also a sign with the dunking. That's a good
Yeah. Hay dunking or going off their hay altogether. So decreased performance, an issue there. Mild recurring colic. Again, that's very nonspecific. Like you could, your horse can be having mild recurring colic for many other reasons. Diarrhea, like the list goes on. These are also, you know, nonspecific issues that could be indicative of other things, which is why it's so important that you need to involve your vet. Okay. If I had a nickel, Jenna, if I had a nickel for every person who said, you know, like Blackie over here, you know, Black Beauty is experiencing some ulcers. And I'm, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to hear that. How do you know? Well, he's doing XYZ. So we decided we're just going to treat them. And I'm like, oh my God, please call your vet. Like, I'm not a fan of the treat, don't scope method. Like, I think that, firstly, we are learning so much about equine gastric ulcer syndrome in the last 10 to 15 years that understanding what you're up against is a critical component of your treatment program. So understanding the severity of the ulcers that your horse is experiencing, understand the region in the stomach that they are being that they're being seen. Like where are these ulcers? Are these squamous ulcers? Are these glandular ulcers? They have completely different approaches to treatment there. And actually, there's a growing body of research right now that supports the use of gastroscopy for squamous ulcers, but also recommends histopathology, which is like the biopsy and cell examination for glandular diagnostics. So it is really important. We don't know a ton about glandular. I say it. We don't know as much about glandular ulcers as we do about squamous ulcers, but it's still important to know. Like, so I mean, obviously the scoping is expensive, right? But mm-hmm. so is a $1,500 course of GastroGuard. So like, if you're going to do it, I feel like you should do it. So again, all of these signs, symptoms are all very nondescript, nonspecific. So it could be a host of things. Don't assume that it's ulcers. It could be something more nefarious. It could be nothing. It could just be that your horse doesn't want to work because it's hot outside or whatever. So sure. It's really important that like, this is important. This is a critical thing. This is something you should be working with your veterinarian on. You should not be taking my advice. You should not be taking your trainer's advice. You should be calling your vet because your vet's the only one that can really tell you what's going on.
Yeah. And to like roll that back a little bit before I roll it right forward, some of those like non-specific signs really just boil down to what you and I say over and over and over again, which is pay attention to your horse and know what they're based
Absolutely.
On. Absolutely. Because for every Yep. horse that goes off their feed, there's also a horse that's going to be getting more aggressive at food time. And that could also be a sign. They might not just be more excited for their food. They might be anticipating how much it hurts to eat, but they still want to eat. For everything, know that there's another opposite option that they could be showcasing. And just at the end of the day, know your horse. And just like you said, if you suspect anything, call your vet. They want to know. They want to help.
I totally agree. I'm going to quick anecdote. Okay. So just a personal experience that I just had. So fresh wound. And I want to share it with you because I think, as you just said, like, oh, my horse checks 3 out of the 5 boxes. He has ulcers. Okay. So think about, I'm thinking of like the 5 that I just said, changes in attitude, poor appetite, picky eating, mild recurring colic, diarrhea, decreased performance. At the beginning of March, we noticed that Tilly was not really feeling well, was kind of off her feed, didn't have an elevated temperature, didn't seem to be like not on the floor, writhing in pain. So we didn't think that it was like a twisted gut. So we're like, maybe she has a mild colic. We'll hit her with some Banamine, hope that it goes away tomorrow. Tomorrow it didn't go away. And the next day it didn't go away. And I think that we could have easily been like, oh, based on this list, maybe she has ulcers. And it turned out that she had peritonitis. So I mean, I know. I don't know that I maybe have not shared. Based on your face, I'm guessing I haven't shared this with you off the pod, but it was wild. So I think that for those of you that don't know what peritonitis is, Google it and don't be squeamish. So it's like, it's pretty serious. It can be fatal. So make sure that if you are, these can be really small things that change in their behavior. Don't automatically go to ulcers. Don't treat your horse with GastroGuard or UlcerGuard before talking to a vet. They are vets for a reason. They spend a lot of time in school and this is their profession. So always trust their judgment and always involve your veterinarian when something does not seem right with your horse.
Could not agree more. So glad that you did involve yours early on and she's home and recovering, right?
Yes. Yes, she is. Yep. Absolutely.
Man.
Okay. We'll move on from the anecdote. I just wanted to put it on here because it's a real life thing.
It is.
And if I had just looked at a checklist that I downloaded off of Google of does my horse have ulcers? that might have resulted in a yes for me. And if I had just started hitting her with Ulcergard, we'd be in a very different place today. So make sure that when you notice any of these symptoms, you're calling your vet.
Yeah. And yes, the vet soapbox is one of my favorites. I feel like we haven't gotten on it in a hot minute. So it was nice to step up there where we belong. But also something you'd mentioned earlier that I want to give people time to digest. Terrible pun.
I liked it.
You mentioned, thank you, the two types of ulcers you've mentioned, glandular and squamous, right?
Yes.
Do you have like a layman's term definition for both of those? Not that anyone's like able to stare at their horse from the outside and know what they are, but if somebody scopes their horse and their vet says, you know, it's one or the other, what's like basic information to know about each one?
Okay. So we have squamous, which is like, I think squamous has been what we've always talked about when we talk about equine gastric ulcer syndrome. Glandular, we're still learning about. So effectively, they differ by the location within the stomach in which they present. The causes, and then of course the treatment, which is why I said I don't believe in the treat, don't scope, because you got to know what you're dealing with. So squamous ulcers are typically occurring in the top unprotected region, usually caused by diet and acid exposure, right? Training, lots of training, fasting from like long periods of time without hay. Glandular affects the lower acid producing region, which is more related to, and again, we're still learning about the glandular ulcers, but more related to environmental stress, and then also reduced mucosal protection in that stomach lining itself. So there is believed to be data showing that there may be differences in the causes between them. And we do know that there are differences in the treatment. So it is where they happen and how we fix them is how they're different.
Cool. Thank you, Scientist Ashley.
Absolutely. Yes, of course.
Okay.
So yeah. This is not within my scientific purview. I just learned a lot because Tilly had ulcers last summer. So I had to educate myself quickly. And
And so of course. Also horsewoman Ashley.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was a pain in the butt, but here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, horses, man.
It happens, man. There's data out there that shows that 90% of performance horses have ulcers in some capacity. 90
up there, but wow.
90 performance. I think the metric was somewhere in like the 40s or something like that for like the general horse population. But once you add them into training, it was something like 90-ish%.
Yeah.
Studies are kind of all over the place, but
I know when I was a kid and riding, you learn more as you go, hopefully. And there was a point where I was at a barn where they would ask when I was coming out to hack. And at first I was like, this is like, why are we so involved in my schedule? Like, it's fine. I was very, you know, high importance of myself and didn't really think about it. And I finally did ask, you know, like, is there a reason? Like, am I in the way? Am I bothering you when I come at certain times? And they're like, no, we just always throw an extra two or flakes or so, you know, the hour, half hour before you're here. And I was like, okay. And they could tell, the bar manager was wonderful. She could tell that I was like not fully understanding it. I was like 16. She was like, so, and she explained the whole like stomach acid thing. She's like, so we're trying to give a little extra to make sure that there's less stomach acid splashing around. Theoretically, he should be eating, but give me a little extra just to make sure that there's something in his belly before you go and splash acid all around as you trot and canter and jump things is not going to harm him. And I was very humbled and very appreciative and thought about that for forever.
Yes. Okay. So I don't have the study up in front of me, but I remember this factoid. So I'm going to find this study and we're going to link it in the show notes.
Okay.
Because I thought it was really interesting and I'm going to correct myself if I'm wrong after the pod, but I'm fairly certain, just speaking from memory here, I want to say it was something like 300 grams of forage was enough to reduce the stomach acid to a degree that it would not cause ulceration. So like, guys, a handful of hay.
You can eat a handful of hay before you start grooming.
So like when I bring Andy in, I stick him in his stall while I'm grooming him and let him eat. And then I pull him out or sometimes I tack him up when he's still eating too, or I'll groom him while he's eating and then I'll put him in the cross ties. So don't hold me to this number, but I'm fairly certain that it was like 300 grams of long stem forage prior to exercise can help. Because when you think about it, like you just said, the stomach acid, if they have an empty belly, is just sloshing around in there. So filling it up with some nice fibrous forage is going to be really, really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. We'll definitely find that study because that's really, really, really helpful information too. If it's just a handful, like that's crazy.
Right? Achievable for everybody. Like you don't need an hour and a half to sit there and watch them eat like a couple flakes of hay. Like, you could do this in 15 minutes.
That's done that ever again. But I at least would remember to feed ahead of time. So it was helpful. But yeah, that's something anybody can do. We love achievable.
Absolutely. Yep.
And speaking of achievable, there's definitely management.
There's
definitely management options to help more than just, you know, feeding a handful or a flake of hay before you start to ride. And one of them, I know everyone who listens to this regularly is going to be so shocked, is forage. It is a forage first diet. It is keeping forage in front of your horse as often and as long as possible, whether that is outside grazing as often if you have the space and the grass and the ability to do so. It is putting a slow feed hay bag in their stall or in their turnout if they have a smaller sand or stone lot. Whatever you can do to just prioritize, you know, how their bodies are meant to digest things, which is at all times. So as always, there's our forage soapbox. We've got two out of them today.
Yes, I am all aboard the forage soapbox. So yeah, having, like, if you really think about it, like I said, they don't have gallbladders. They're constantly secreting bile. They're constantly secreting stomach acid. So having something for that stomach acid and bile to do when it's in the belly, it's going to be breaking down that food instead of breaking down the lining of the stomach. So absolutely forage first. Keep them grazing at all times. Now, sometimes you can't keep them grazing at all times. I understand. You mentioned slow feed hay pillows. Some horses, just because of their energy demands, like horses on the racetrack, we know that they get really large grain meals or that they need a lot of concentrate in a day in order to achieve their caloric needs, right? Instead of feeding two gigantic grain meals, you know, try to spread that out through the day. They get the same amount of concentrate throughout a 24-hour period, but we're spreading it out with more forage in between. So keeping the belly full of forage, fantastic. And then you can also, you know, if you're feeding your horses a grass hay, you may also want to alternatively consider adding some alfalfa. Alfalfa is higher in protein and calcium, so that can naturally help to buffer some of that stomach acid. So there's a lot of schools of thought out there that, like, you never need drugs if you have alfalfa. Now, I'm not going to go that far. But also, I do want to mention here, if you are considering adding alfalfa to your horse's diet, please also consult your veterinarian, because there's a lot of horses out there that may not be, that it may not be indicated best for. So make sure that you're using your professional resources when you're changing your horse's diet.
Yeah, absolutely. As a note too, it's been a while since I've mentioned this. Let's throw a third soapbox into the episode. There's a program called feedxl.com.
Yes.
You can plug in literally everything your horses eat, from the type of hay to the supplements to the grain to the turnout. And it's not going to tell you if your horse has ulcers, because only your veterinarian can do that. But it is going to give you an indicator of how much forage your horse is getting versus how much would be ideal and things like that. So if you want to approach your vet with more than just like, hey, doc, like, should I? You can always start there as well and just like really have a solid foundation for you guys to start off from. Or you can approach your vet with, hey doc, should I? And they're going to be very happy to talk you through a lot of that information as well. So different strokes for different folks. And I think we had mentioned too, along with, you know, the way we feed them and the way they eat and the way their turnout situation goes, that leads into like lifestyle, right? So like, yes, training, but also turnout. So like with your horses, you have big, beautiful fields that you have a lot of your horses go out onto. And for various reasons that are very specific to your two horses, they're not able to do that. So not everyone gets to be on the, you know, 20-acre back paddock. Some horses are stand and stuff. It happens.
Andy's not nice to others. He does not play well with others. So Andy gets banished to individual turnout. And he's also, what did we call him? Well-groceried. He's a robust fella.
Well-groceried.
Yes. He's doing a lot with what we give him. He's just looking so nice and rotund at all times. So he doesn't need a lot of fresh green grass. So actually, I love like low quality hay for him, because I can keep him eating it all day without him getting fat, right? So My professor that I did my graduate work with, Dr. Brian Nielsen, he always says that the best hay is the hay that your horse needs. Like, is it like calorically dense? Some horses don't need calorically dense hay. They need just lots of forage. So sometimes like the cruddy looking hay could be exactly what Andy needs, right? So keep them out as much as they can. And sometimes that looks like standing in a dry lot with crummy hay in front of them to keep them busy. Sometimes it looks like they're out in, you know, we also have horses on 24/7 turnout. So sometimes it looks like they're out in a herd living outside on pasture board. That's great too. Now, again, as there is with everything, there's a caveat here. There's going to be times where your horse is not getting turned out at all. When you're going down to the Kentucky Horse Park and you're there for 6 days at a horse show, your horse is standing in a stall and the turnout that they're getting is you hand walking them and hand grazing them. Great. In situations like that, you throw so much hay at them that their stall looks like it's bedded in hay. You got hay coming out of your nose. You got hay every which way. Constant access to hay is what is going to be your friend in those situations. Because one, you're already adding the stress of traveling and changing the routine. So maybe it's not a horse show. Maybe it's going to the vet where they are, you know, hospitalized like Tilly just was for 3 or 4 days, right? Constant access to hay. So in the scenarios where that stomach acid is rising and you have a stressful situation and you're checking off more of those boxes of ulcer risk, the one thing that you can do to help your horse for sure when the odds are stacked against you is just to give them free choice hay. So I just turned turnout back into forage because we can't overstate it. Right.
We listed like two specific scenarios that for some people, they're like, well, I'm not horse showing. Well, like my horse isn't, knock on wood, everybody, going to, you know, an emergency situation anytime soon. Great. Love that for all of you. What happens when your paddocks flood? When you don't want the grass to get torn up early in spring. So they're still not really going out a ton until everything feels like it's taken root. Like there's a lot of scenarios that I feel like it's easy to overlook because it's not training. It's not travel. It's not things like that. But there are still reasons horses are inside. And at the end of the day, the more forage, the better. And I'll bring it back to slow feed hay nets and other slow feed options. There's like slow feed ground feeders. There's like even small toys, which are not necessarily forage all the time, but just kind of help keep their brain engaged. And then they'll go back to eating and then engage their brain and go back to eating. There's those. Oh my gosh. I think I'll have to link it in the show notes. I think it's like the Hay Chicks rollerball where you can shove pellets into it. And they notice it and it like drops a couple pellets as they
interesting. Walk.
Like those are also options to help keep something in their stomach and encourage them to move around in a dry lot. So lots of options for, you know, lifestyle and things like that. But then something along with like the travel, the training and the changes that we talked about earlier is stress. And we talked about like horse mental wellness in an episode last year. And we talked about, you know, where horses live in the barn. Some horses want that front stall on the aisle where they greet everybody. Some horses want to be in the middle where they're a little bit more surrounded by friends and warmth and coziness. Some horses just aren't really happy in a stall without a window. So that's such a simple, well, I say simple because it doesn't require anything other than moving horses, but you know, for lack of other options, a simple, straightforward way to reduce stress, keeping their routine simple and straightforward. If you ride 4 days a week and then all of a sudden you want to ride 7 days a week, maybe don't make that jump right away. Maybe, you know, add on a day for a couple of weeks and then add on another day, just giving them that time to adjust to a new routine. And same thing with training and shows. For hunter jumpers, for dressage people, there's probably a show every weekend, but horses do need some downtime. Horses do need some time in between to come back to themselves and come back to their routine and reestablish things. It's kind of like people. Like I feel like we don't give ourselves enough credit for how much we need routine, but we need it too. It's just easier for us because we're the ones making decisions. Your horse isn't making the decisions. So you got to give them extra time because of that. But all of that can really help with just your horse maintaining an equilibrium in their mind and in their body when it comes to stuff like this.
I couldn't agree more. And I don't know if like when you travel for work, I mean, maybe this is just me because I'm like a crazy person, but like I get to the end of the day and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, you've had to be on all day. You had a working breakfast, a working lunch, a working dinner, and you get home and I'm like, my nightly skincare routine is how I feel like a human again. And it is like reliable and it's what I know. And I like can watch. So I think that giving them something that is reliable and that they know, even when the whole situation of their day is completely foreign and different and you're traveling and things are looking a lot different than they do day to day, keeping their meals at the same time, if you can help it, keeping their grooming patterns, you know, the same, making sure you're using the same tack, you're not switching up a bit right before you go into the arena or using a new half pad or something like that. So keeping everything as reliable as you can and minimizing the change where you can, I think certainly goes a long way too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we got to talk about it. We're a supplement company, right?
Yes.
And there's also supplements that can help lend support. And so something that I want to state before we really go any further is we've used the word ulcers a lot in this episode, and we will continue to do so. Here is where we will not use the word ulcers at all, and that is on purpose. And it's really important to say that supplements are not an FDA-approved medication or drug. They are support. They are help. They are not a fix. They are not a cure. So because of that, like we will tell you that this supplement can help support your horse's stomach health, but we're not going to tell you it's going to help with your horse's ulcers because it's not a drug. So I know, you know, a million years ago when I was on customer care, some folks would kind of get frustrated that I couldn't tell them this is going to help with your horse's ulcers, but that's why.
Yeah.
Like it's a weird line. It's a tough thing because like we have these ingredients that are meant to lend support in a very specific way. But as a supplement company, we also want to do our due diligence and make sure that we are following the rules and regulations that allow us to continue providing supplements to people. So that's what the fourth soapbox of the day, but we got there.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I want to actually continue off there is that PSA, if you are purchasing a supplement from a company that is not SmartPak, and they do tell you that that is that their product is going to rid your horse of ulcers, run far, far away in the opposite direction, because that is not a legal claim. And if the company that you're purchasing from does not make legal claims, then I'd be very concerned about the ethical sourcing of the product itself, et cetera, et cetera. So supplements cannot fix things. They are not designed to treat, cure, diagnose any illness or syndrome, anything, right? So the purpose of a supplement is to help the body function as it was designed to function. So when we talk about stomach health, we are talking about aiding to keep a horse's anatomy and physiology the way that it was intended to function when it was created, right? All right. So with a great PSA behind us, let's talk about gastric supplements.
Yeah. So Okay. We have a couple. Where do you actually want to start?
I mean, you can go. You can go ahead. Sorry, okay. I'll chime in.
So yeah. One of the most popular ones that we talk about with customers and riders and barns and people who are, you know, riding and training is our Smart Gut line. So always going to bring that up, because we have a regular Smart Gut, which is great for helping to maintain stomach health. We have Smart Gut Ultra, which has like higher levels of some targeted ingredients. It has some research that I want to give Ashley a second to talk about, but not yet. And then also Smart GI Ultra, which we've talked about before, that combines both digestive and gastric support. So like there's a of these options for you. They do range in price, but they give you different kinds of support. And something that I think I forget about sometimes is that whatever you start on, you do not have to feed for forever. If you want to start your horse on the creme de la creme, great. If you feel like you've gotten the most out of that and your horse is at a really good spot and you want to try backing it off or doing something different, great. So always putting that caveat in there. But because I mentioned the research, I got to hand it over to Ashley. So Smart Gut Ultra, Ashley, can you tell us about what research was done with that?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So let's hold on. Let's back. I want to back up like before we get, because that's the big kahuna. So I want to like, Okay. So I want to just back it up just a hot minute and start at the very top where we kind of break down like what are the products doing in general?
Yeah, that's
very cool. Is that a fair place to, okay.
Yeah.
So I know we had mentioned how the stomach acid is constantly being secreted into the belly, right? So one thing that we can do to aid in giving the stomach a fighting chance is to alter the pH level in that stomach environment. So some ingredients that you would see would be like a calcium and magnesium carbonate, right? Those are pH buffers that are going to help to change the level of acidity to hopefully, give the stomach lining a chance and, modulate that acidic environment, right? Then you have other ingredients that are going to support the lining of the stomach and support that tissue itself. Those may look like glutamine, pectin, lecithin, sea buckthorn. So we're getting kind of into some of the more herbal remedies there. And then you're also going to have some that are soothing, and they're going to help to just soothe that mucosal lining. And those ones are going to be aloe vera, licorice. And then one of my favorites is the combination of MHB3 hyaluronic acid with beta-glucan, as you can see in our Smart Perform Advanced liquid. So some different mechanisms there. And you'll see a lot of these used in conjunction with one another. So you're kind of hitting all three targets there. So yes, now we get into Smart Gut Ultra. Okay.
Back a step first. That was helpful.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to give us like the big 30,000 foot view, because then everyone can appreciate why Smart Gut Ultra is so exciting. Smart Gut Ultra has a combination of all of the above, right? So we've taken all three of those approaches and combined them into one to support stomach health in horses that are undergoing stress. So again, we always talk about feeding a product for 6 to 8 weeks to get that full effect. And this would be no different, right? Okay, yes. So Smart Gut Ultra, one of my favorites. It is one of our several clinically validated solutions that we sell at SmartPak. So one that we're obviously very, very proud of. That research is incredibly compelling. So in a university-led research study, our product, Smart Gut Ultra, was actually shown to support stomach health in horses after omeprazole had been administered to treat non-glandular gastric ulcers, right? So remember, we talked about drugs and we talked about how supplements are not drugs. So this is one, and we'll put a pin in this too, and we'll come back to it after we talk about some of the pharmacotherapy options. But this is one where this is a holistic approach, right? We're talking about supplements in conjunction with drugs. So Smart Gut Ultra was studied after a full course of treatment with drugs. So these are supplements that are, again, once the drugs do their job, the supplement can come in and help to maintain a healthy, normal environment. So very exciting there. And again, some of the ingredients that you're going to see in here, that calcium carbonate, like we talked, to help to modulate that pH, fructooligosaccharides, mannooligosaccharides, those are the prebiotic fibers that we had talked about, glycine, marshmallow root, slippery elm. So some of those herbal ingredients that we had talked about. So really a great approach using all three of those, supporting the stomach lining integrity, helping to maintain a healthy, advantageous pH level, and then also helping to soothe irritation and really nourish that gut mucosa. So Smarka Ultra really is combining all of those various attack methods to really help keep your horse's gut in tip-top shape.
Yeah, she really is that girl. Like, that's very multi-pronged, very multi-pronged.
She is that girl. That's right. That's right.
And so you mentioned that the study that we did was in conjunction with using, you know, omeprazole, which I think is more colloquially known as like Gastroguard. Do you want to talk a little bit about what those options look like too?
Yes. Yes, we do. Because this is the, so if your horse has ulcers, you need to treat them with drugs. Like that's like, there is not going to be a magic. I wish that there was a magic solution for you. There's not going to be a magic solution for you if your horse already has ulcers. So you are likely going to see your veterinarian, depending on what your scope looks like and what type and severity of ulcers that you have. Your veterinarian is either going to recommend that you use omeprazole, sucralfate, or misoprostol. So those three are typically used, some of them sometimes in conjunction with one another. So let's do the big kahuna, because everybody has heard of Gastroguard. It is the only FDA-approved paste omeprazole supplement for horses right now to treat equine gastric ulcer syndrome, which makes it very important. It is so omeprazole is a proton pump inhibitor that actually works its magic in the body by reducing the amount of acid in the stomach, which gives those tissues a little bit of time to heal. It obviously requires a vet diagnosis. It requires a prescription. It's typically like a month-long course that you're having to give on an empty stomach for your horse. And in a perfect world, you get to the end of your course, you rescope, and the ulcers are gone. A lot of people, I see this all over like the forums on Facebook, the OTTB forums that lots of different people saying, oh, I get, you know, Gastroguard is too expensive. I give compounded omeprazole. Really worth noting here that compounded omeprazole is not the same as Gastroguard. There is patented enteric coating in Gastroguard, which is what makes it so special. And it's why Gastroguard's the only Gastroguard, right? That protects the active ingredients from the acid in the stomach so that they can actually be absorbed and do their thing. So that is why it is, right? Patented technology. And that's why Gastroguard has a chokehold. It's the only FDA approved one. So very important there that you be cognizant that compounded omeprazole does not have the same qualities. It is still omeprazole, but it just does not have the same qualities from a bioavailability and, you know, pharmacokinetics standpoint. So really interesting here too, is that a study in 2022 actually demonstrated that squamous ulcers can return to pre-treatment levels in as little as 3 days following discontinuation of treatment. Yes. Okay. So we have heard about the rebound gastric hyperacidity, right? So you take the horse off of the omeprazole and it comes back with vengeance, and the gastric acid juices are just flowing wild, right? So they have kind of coined that as the reason for this. So this is why when we designed the study for Smart Gut Ultra, we wanted to use it in conjunction with a full course of omeprazole. So the Smart Gut Ultra study was after a course of omeprazole, we introduced Smart Gut Ultra, and the outcome was that SGU added to feed prevented the worsening of gastric ulcers without altering the pH of the stomach and may aid in protecting against the recurrence after omeprazole treatment. So when we talk about spending a lot of money on your omeprazole, once your horse has reached peak health again, and you want to help to protect those tissues, you introduce a Smart Gut Ultra for the, you know, that's 11 more months that you need something supportive to help continue on that health. So a really cool study. We can link that. We can put the DOI in the show notes so that everybody can go read that study. Really wonderful study out of LSU, and worth reading for sure.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, I know about the study. I know about omeprazole, but I don't think I remembered, if I had learned it, how quickly those ulcers can come back after stopping treatment. 3 days is pretty crazy.
Insane, right? Insane. Yeah. So which also can tell you
early and consistently can really make a big difference there to aid with the actual medication being given.
Absolutely. But that also can tell you how quickly they can come on for the first time. Like if a resurgence can make them, I mean, and granted, they're saying that because of the rebound effect, it can happen faster. But I think that it just goes to show that like this can, ulceration can happen very quickly.
Our delicate little flowers on four legs.
So yes, that is that omeprazole, the crown jewel, typically very successful for squamous ulcers. Now we talked a little bit about glandular. We talked about how the treatment is different for those ulcers and how actually the cause of them is thought to be a little bit different too. So this is why it's important to connect with your vet. The two other drugs that we see being used is misoprostol and sucralfate. They are not proton pump inhibitors and they have different mechanisms of action. The sucralfate often prescribed alongside omeprazole. So you'll typically use them in conjunction. And this is going to actually bind to the damaged tissue and aid in the promotion of healing. And then the misoprostol is a prostaglandin analog, and that's going to actually reduce the gastric acid secretion itself. Again, this is one that is typically indicated for glandular ulcers. It is worth noting that you cannot give this to pregnant mares. So again, vet, call your vet in. Just, you know what, after every sentence, I'm just saying, give your vet a call. Ashley said this thing. She's not a vet. I should probably call my vet. Please just don't go buying my misoprostol and giving it to your horses because, well, one, you can't get it. It is a drug and you need, you need a veterinarian, but
you need to question.
That's right. But yes, again, one that is often combined with some of the drugs that we just mentioned and has been coined as very effective in some of the more unusual cases where we're talking about glandular ulcers that are maybe not responding to omeprazole alone. And then we have my favorite. We have UlcerGuard. This is by the same makers of GastroGuard. It is FDA approved to prevent ulcers, and you can get it on smartpak.com. You can get it on chewy.com. You can get it at Tractor Supply. This is your weekend warrior, guys. This is the one that you keep in your trunk when your vet says, give a quarter tube every day leading up to the horse show to help prevent ulcers. Because one of my favorite sayings is that a ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The best way to not get ulcers is to make sure, or the best way to treat ulcers, make sure that they don't happen, right? So this is one thing that you certainly can do. We had talked about throwing hay and hand walking and giving as much turnout as you can. Well, in scenarios where all of those boxes can't be checked, you always can use UlcerGuard as a preventative. You should use it alongside with your veterinarian direction, even though it is over the counter, but it is FDA approved to prevent ulcers. No supplement can say that. And so UlcerGuard, if you do not have a prescription, UlcerGuard is certainly going to be something that you should keep handy.
Yeah, we had a horse that I showed with pretty regularly, and he was such a solid citizen, but he had gotten diagnosed with ulcers, I think twice. And it was always like at the start of show season. So like you said, they can happen so fast. And after two, the vet and his people just worked out that he got UlcerGuard, you know, like 4 days before the show and 4 days after the show and whatever the, you know, appropriate amount was for his size and needs. But he never got diagnosed with them again. So that seemed like a pretty good indicator that it was working and doing the right thing. And he was the only horse I knew that needed that kind of support. But different strokes for different folks. Like our whole thing is, you know, one of a kind solutions for one of a kind horses.
There we go.
Don't treat your horse like the horse next to your horse being stabled in the barn. Like your horse is the individual. Right. Find what works for them. Work with your vet. And I think it's really cool that UlcerGuard and GastroGuard are both available. So you have options. So it's not always that you're spending, you know, the medication, you know, healing version. You can also do the, hey, let's not have to get to there version if possible.
Yes.
Combine that with all the supplements and all the things that you want to do for their daily support as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think something that you've already talked about, but just worth, you know, one more time rounding it up. Like we know that supplements are not medications, which is the same thing as saying treatment and prevention and daily support are not the same thing. They all serve
100%.
Yeah, they can all be done for the same horse. You can do different things for different horses. It's truly a mix and match until you find, you know, what works for you and your horse and your goals and sometimes your wallet. So always keeping that in mind. But I think at the end of the day, if we have not made it clear yet, if you think your horse might have an ulcer or multiple ulcers, call your vet. That's the first place to start before you do any drug or preventative or even a supplement.
Absolutely. Yeah. So 2 points you made there. One, treatment, prevention, and daily support are certainly different, right? Your Smart Gut Ultra or your Leg Up Stomach, your aloe vera pellets, whatever it is that you're using goes into your feed bin every day to support a normal, healthy, everyday homeostatic stomach environment. Prevention is used in times of high stress like travel or shows, and that's where your ulcer guard is going to come in. And then your treatment plans are going to be after a formal diagnosis made by a veterinarian with prescription grade medication. So obviously, very, very different there. Supplements are not medicine. They are not drugs. They are not pharmacotherapy, and they're never going to be able to achieve that. So it is super important that even if you're doing your best to create a beautiful supplement regimen for your horse's stomach, that you still take into account that there are times where veterinarian intervention is going to be necessary.
And we're talking through all this, and I feel like you and I are doing a very good job of driving home these points. I feel like it would be remiss to not just say, if you think your horse could benefit from stomach support, you can put them on a stomach supplement anytime. Like,
sure.
Be very, very careful because we're talking so specifically about a condition.
Yeah.
But like, yes. If you just think your horse would benefit from having stomach support and supporting their stomach lining and supporting their pH balance, like, don't let us talk about ulcers scare you off of just supporting stomach health in general.
I'm going to give you a real life example of this.
Yeah, do it.
Okay, so my horses get Smart Perform Advanced Liquid, which is the MHB3 hyaluronan with the beta-glucan, some diagulin, a little bit of aloe vera, is the same components that were studied in a Haggard study in 2016 for the support in healing of some gastric ulcers. Really incredible ingredients, right? I understand, because I'm so close to the products and so close to the industry, that this is not a drug. So this is something that goes into my horse's feed every single day, regardless of whether they are being ridden. Sometimes it is winter and I sit on them twice a week. They're still getting Smart Perform Advanced. This is a daily driver. We talk about the reliability of a feed program. We talk about consistency of a feed program. This is something that is in their food, in their bodies, circulating every single day to help them to maintain a normal homeostatic body, right? When I'm about to put Tilly on a trailer, she's getting some ulcer guard. When I had Tilly diagnosed, she got Gastroguard. So they're all indicated for very different scenarios. But like Jenna said, they can certainly be used in conjunction. So there is no reason why, if you have an ulcery horse, you cannot add a supplement to their daily regimen. It certainly is not going to heal ulcers. But again, it does support some of those gut tissues, can aid in nourishing the mucosal lining. So there is a lot that it can do to help support when your horse is struggling, even alongside an adjunct to your horse's pharmacotherapy.
Yep. It's no different than how we've talked in the past about you can feed your horse and yourself the best diet possible, and you can still add a multivitamin.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that, you know, we've talked about this kind of in like the joint capacity too, that you can have your horse's joints injected and give them Adequan, but also have them on Smart Stride Ultra. Yeah. So it's like, you know, we're talking about a very well-rounded, multi-pronged approach to wellness.
Yep. Yep. Love a holistic option so that way you're hitting every angle you possibly can
yes.
for your horse's health. So yeah, we got a little intense on the, this isn't a drug because it's not a drug, but
it's not a drug. Today,
supplements are meant to be different. And that's why we have a lot of options. And if you, you know, heard us talk about, you know, the three tiers that we offer, but you want to know more, our customer care team always deserves the plug. They're great to talk to. They can walk you through not only our brand of supplements that we have, you know, put together. Well, Ashley has put together very thoughtfully, but also the wide range of other brands that we carry that we believe in and we stand behind because we carry them. So. If this has, you know, started your thought process on wanting to know more either about what you currently feed or what you could be feeding, there's always that option since, unfortunately, the podcast did not allow us to talk to you directly as much as we would love that. But I think that covers a lot.
I mean, yeah, I think so too.
Everybody's barn and looking at their setups. I think we've hopefully given you guys some stuff that you can utilize and take away with you. And for me, I know one of the things that I'm still a little floored. I know we just said it, but just the fact that ulcers can happen and then can recur in as little as 3 days. If your horse is acting weird and it's come on pretty suddenly, I think that's a good enough indicator to just call your vet and be, you know, having conversations and don't talk yourself out of it just because it was, you know, sudden or because it you know, it's fluctuating. Just things can happen really fast with horses. So if you have questions or concerns, go talk to your vet.
Amen. I love that.
All right. Then I think that's what we've got for you guys today. So next up, I will remind everybody about the giveaway. If you haven't heard about it yet, stay tuned and we'll see you there in a second. And here we are. Our next giveaway is ready. So as of the start of this episode, Fly Frustrations Part 1, we're giving away a new Smart Equine prize package. The winner will receive a $25 Smart Equine gift card, a Smart Equine travel blanket, and a Smart Equine thermos. You can enter to win by clicking or tapping on the link in the podcast description, which will take you directly to our giveaway form, or you can go to www.smartequine.com/podcast giveaway. This giveaway is open for the entire month of May, so if you're listening to this at any point during May of 2026, be sure to get your entry in and good luck.
You can find links to today's guests and products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
We are here twice a month on the 15th and the 30th, but in between, find us on Instagram and Facebook as Smart Equine or shop online at smartequine.com.
Until next time, stay smart, stay consistent,
and give your horse a cookie from us.